Jivanandasya Jana Jana Salakaya Chaksu Smilitam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namah Sri Chaitanya Manuvistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Sayam Vigada Mayam Dadati Sapadantikam Vansha Kalpatu Vyasta Kripa Sindhu Vaibhasa Patitanam Pabanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. So the king went out to kill many animals to enjoy himself in his irreligious way. In other words, he went out to the material world to really enjoy, have a good time. Enjoyment for a materialistic person means enjoy sensual pleasures. So he left what at home? He left his material intelligence at home, or his intelligence, and was just, his activities were based upon his mind. So in the allegory, this means that he left his wife behind. So what did he do? He killed and killed and killed. And in this way, those who were learned, knowledgeable, merciful, soft-hearted, felt very bad to see his activities. They felt great compassion to the animals that he had harmed, caused so much pain to. Similarly, the wise person in the world, when he sees the unintelligent activities of a materialistic person, even though he is driven, practically a materialistic person isn't choosing to perform those activities. He's driven, whipped by his lust, by his anger, by his greed, by his illusion. So when someone is whipped into doing something, the last thing we would say is that he's freely choosing. He's being forced, actually, by the lower modes of material nature, passion, ignorance. So, after text 10, did we read 10?
No.
A talking door. How wonderful. A crying door. We didn't read 10?
No.
So, in this way, King Paranjana killed many animals, including rabbits, boars, buffalo, bisons, black deer, porcupines, and other game animals. After killing and killing, the king became very tired. Srila Prabhupada's purport. A person in the mode of ignorance commits many sinful activities. Ignorance means that one doesn't know what is right from what is wrong. So naturally, if one doesn't know right from wrong, one will do the wrong thing much of the time. By chance, every once in a while, someone may do something good. But the natural tendency of the forceful modes of passion and ignorance is to push us and push us and push us downward to do ignorant things, to do passionate things, sinful things. Sinful means things that are bad for us. They don't actually bring us happiness. Rather, they bring us suffering in this life and in future lives. So in ignorance, we're not aware of this, but all we know is what? I want, I want, I want, I want, and I want it now, and I don't care. So the resultant, a person in the mode of ignorance commits many sinful activities because he's ignorant. He doesn't know the difference between what is sinful and what is good. In the Bhakti Samhita Sindhu, Srila Rupa Goswami explains that a man becomes sinful out of ignorance only. What is his main ignorance? Yeah, exactly. We think we are something that we are not. And on the other hand, we don't know. Ignorance also means the covering of knowledge. So what knowledge is covered? With the ignorant identity, we think ourselves the body, and the covered knowledge is who we actually are. And who are we? Krishna's servant. And a specific identity, an individual specific identity. So those who are not in knowledge, who commit violations of the standard laws, are subject to be punished under criminal laws. Similarly, the law of nature, the laws of nature are very stringent. What does stringent mean?
Uncompromising.
Not harsh, but strict. Strict, uncompromising. This is the law. It's like if you jump up in the air, what's the law? Well, at least that you'll come down to the earth again. Yes. That's the law of gravity. If a child touches fire without knowing the effect, he must be burned. In other words, ignorance is no excuse. Even though he is only a child, innocent in one sense. But ignorance still doesn't give us any privilege to escape the reaction. If a child violates the law of nature, there is no compassion. If the child jumps into the fire, nature won't say, "Oh, it's only a poor child. Let's give him a let's protect the child." No, it's harsh in that sense. The stringentness brings harshness because it's uncompromising in its strictness. Only through ignorance does a person violate the laws of nature. And when he comes to knowledge, he does not commit any more sinful acts. So the king, after so much killing, became tired. Text 11. After this, the king, very much fatigued, hungry, and thirsty, after a hard day of killing, returned to his royal palace. After returning, he took a bath, had an appropriate dinner, then he took rest, and he thus became freed from restlessness. Prabhupada's purport. So everything in this is analogous. A materialistic person, so he's gone to the forest, jungles alone, he's killed, had his pleasures, sinful pleasures based on ignorance, causing pain to others, selfish pleasures, not caring about either others or the reaction to himself. He became tired of that. He left his religious intelligence, his wife home. He became tired of that. He returned home, refreshed himself. So here's Prabhupada's purport. A materialistic person works throughout the whole week very, very hard. He is always asking, "Where is money? Where is money?" Then at the end of the week, he wants to retire from these activities and go to some secluded place to rest. King Paranjana returned to his home because he was very much fatigued from hunting animals in the forest. In this way, his conscience came to stop him from committing further sinful activities and make him return home. In Bhagavad Gita, materialistic persons are described as duskritina, which indicates those who are always engaged in sinful activities. When a person comes to his senses and understands how he's engaging in sinful activities, he returns to his conscience, which is herein figuratively described as the palace, to right behavior. Generally, a materialistic person is infected by the material modes of passion and ignorance. These modes really give us so much trouble, hour by hour, day by day, week by week. So much trouble come from the modes of passion and ignorance, and we don't know what the cause of our troubles are, but this is what it is. The result of passion and ignorance are lust and greed. These are the actual enemies. Kamas, krodas, titas, lobas, diras, tatla. No. Trivedam, narakshedam. Anyone know what that means? Dwaram, nashanam, atmana. Anyone know that verse? Yeah, dwaram. There are three gates leading to hell. Kamas, krodas. First is lust, krodha, tatalobas. So, and then diras, then chajankyate. Is that right, Sasra? And so the wise person doesn't walk through these gates based on passion, ignorance. The results of passion, ignorance, are lust and greed. They burn like fire and they are never satisfied. However, when he comes to his senses, he wants to retire. He wants to leave these things. They are very, very difficult masters. They cannot be pleased in any circumstances. Rather, they just demand more and more and more, no matter how subservient we are to our lust and greed. So when one comes to his senses, he wants to get relief from these masters, means he wants to retire from these activities. According to Vedic civilization, such retirement is positively recommended, and this portion of life is called vanaprastha. Retirement is absolutely necessary for a materialist who wants to become free from the activities of a sinful life. King Paranjana is coming home, taking bath and having an appropriate dinner, indicate that a materialistic person must retire from sinful activities and become purified by accepting a spiritual master and hearing from him about the values of life. That means knowledge comes to him, replacing the ignorance. Ignorance is said to be eternal in the past, but not necessarily eternal in the future. Because when we think of there are three Sanskrit terms for eternality. One is eternal in the past and the future, past, present, future. One is, I don't remember this, which ones are they? One means eternal in the past and not eternal in the future. And one means eternal in the future but not in the past. So I can't remember the examples of many of them. The one I can't remember is the one. Well, anyway, here's an example of something that could be eternal in the past and not eternal in the future. Like, does anyone know what the word? See who's in the room. I'll say what language it's in. Okay, I won't use a Hindi-based word. You can't guess this one. Chomatya. You know what that... What? What does that mean?
It's Chinese, isn't it?
Well, what does it mean? So, was there a time when you knew what this meant? Was there a time that you knew what this word meant? Okay. I've been caught. Forget this example. Okay, make believe. So something that you don't know, you may not have known it forever, practically speaking, but as soon as you know what it means, and chomatya means, what are you doing? As soon as you know it, and your ignorance is gone, and it's gone for good.
You can forget it.
Well, this is a simple example. So true ignorance about who we are can be eternal, nityavada, but as soon as it's gone forever. So so one should become purified by accepting a spiritual master and hearing from him about the values of life, the eternal. So immediately ignorance can be dispelled. If one would do this, he would feel completely refreshed, just as one feels after taking a bath. After receiving initiation from a bona fide spiritual master, one must abandon all kinds of sinful activities, namely illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, and meat eating. So Paranjana has returned home, refreshed himself from his ignorant activities. After this, this is text 12, King Pranjana decorated his body with suitable ornaments. He also smeared scented sandalwood pulp over his body and put on flower garlands. In this way, he became completely refreshed. After this, he began to search out his queen. So for real pleasure, after retiring from our activities, one should, from our materialistic activities, which really do tire us out, one should search out one's original consciousness. And one should get, for that, one should get saintly association. Prabhupada explains this in the purport. So he's looking for his intelligence to do this. So after taking his dinner, and the analogy, the allegory does shift in places, what means what. So after taking his dinner and having his thirst and hunger satisfied, King Pranjana felt some joy within his heart. Instead of being elevated to a higher consciousness, he became captivated by Cupid and was moved by a desire to find his wife, who kept him satisfied in his household life. Prabhupada in his purport explains how dangerous a materialistic consciousness is. So one may be, and we see this, and almost like the example that Jagatwini gave of someone forgetting. So very, very often we become very disturbed with our material pursuits. We've tried and tried and tried to enjoy, and what do we get? Just suffering, tired, beaten, whipped, frustrated, angry, upset. So then we become very sincere in spiritual life due to the great distresses that we've encountered in material life. But then, after taking to spiritual life and getting somewhat refreshed and relaxed, now what's the tendency when the distress is removed? To go back to the spirit of enjoyment, because it's never been lost from our heart. Transcendental knowledge can truly remove this from our heart. But there's such a tendency, especially if one comes to spiritual life in distress, there is such a tendency that as soon as the distress is removed, to immediately go back and try and enjoy oneself. The spirit blossoms up again. So Prabhupada explains, this is neophyte consciousness. This is really just basic sakam bhakti, or very kanista adhikari, prakrita bhakta, very, very beginner consciousness. The philosophical and spiritual understandings have truly not entered the heart yet, the depths of the consciousness. They have not been deeply assimilated or taken in or accepted. So it is clearly visible that when a neophyte in Krishna consciousness eats too much, he falls down. Instead of being elevated to pure consciousness by eating prasadam or being a devotee, he becomes attracted by Cupid. The so-called brahmachari becomes agitated by women, and the vanaprastha may be again captivated into having sex with his wife. Or he may again begin to search out another wife. Due to some sentiment, he may give up his own wife and come into the association of devotees and a spiritual master. But due to his past sinful life, so it rears its head again, the previous enjoying tendencies and the remembrances, the sanskars, the impressions within our consciousness. So this is the very heavy thing we have to deal with. And that is why it's a struggle continuously, because these tendencies keep on coming up and up and up and up again, and we beat them down and then relax and get some relief, then they come up again. Unless or until we come to the point of giving up the spirit that I am the enjoyer and really deeply accept that I am Krishna's servant. And then when these things come up, they don't have power anymore. They may come up still, and they will come up still, But they don't have power anymore. They come and then they go very quickly because one doesn't entertain them. They're like just guests into the consciousness. But as soon as we want them to stay, we invite them to sit down and what are you interested in? Have a conversation with them. Then they entangle us with their sweet words in the sense of they're saying, if you do this and this and this, you'll get this and this and this. But they can't deliver, they can only promise. So when the desires come to the mind, visit the palace of our mind, we can't entertain them like that. We can say, thank you very much, goodbye. Don't want to, just like when someone knocks on the door and says, you come back to Telstra or Optus or something like that. Say, thank you, goodbye. Don't want any today. So, due to some sentiment, he may give up his own wife and come into the association of devotees and a spiritual master. But due to his past sinful life, he cannot stay. Instead of being elevated to Krishna consciousness, he falls down, being attracted by Cupid, and takes to another wife for sex enjoyment. The fall of the neophyte devotee from the path of Krishna consciousness down to material life is described in Srimad Bhagavatam by Narada Muni. Chakva svadamam charanam bhujam hare bhajanna pakva atapate tato yati yatrakva vabhadram aburamusyakim kovartapto bhajatam svadamata. This indicates that our neophyte devotee may fall down from the path of Krishna consciousness due to his apakwa. What is pakwa? Apakwa. Immature, yes. Immaturity. Kaccha. Kacchaness. So his still, even if one falls down due to his immaturity, his service to Krishna never goes in vain. However, a person who remains steadfast in his family duty or so-called social or family obligations but does not take to Krishna consciousness receives no profit. One who comes to Krishna consciousness must be very cautious and refrain from prohibited activities as defined by Srila Rupa Goswami in his Upadeshamrita. What are those activities that we have that are the unwanted guests? Atyahar prayasascha prajalpo niyamagraha janasangas chaloyam cha sadbir bhakti vinashati. Raise your hand if you've read Upadeshamrita. Raise your hand if you've studied it. It's worth studying again and again. A neophyte devotee should neither eat too much nor collect more money than necessary. Eating too much or collecting too much is called atyahara. For such atyahara, one must endeavor very much. This is called prayas. Superficially, one may show himself to be very much faithful to the rules and regulations, but at the same time, not be fixed in the regulative principles. This is called niyamagraha. By mixing with undesirable persons, or janasangha, one becomes tainted with lust and greed and falls down from the path of devotional service. So this was in regard to he came back, refreshed himself, and wanted to meet with his wife. At that time, King Pranjana was a little anxious. Why? Why was he anxious? No, because he had gone and left her. What happens if she was angry at him or something like that? And he inquired from the household women, "My dear, beautiful women, are you and your mistress all very happy like before or not?" Purport. In this verse, the word Vidisha indicates King Prachinibarhi. When a man becomes refreshed by association with devotees and awakes to Krishna consciousness, he consults the activities of his mind, namely thinking, feeling, and willing, and decides whether he should return to his material activities or stay steady in spiritual consciousness, consulting the mind for this. The word kushalam refers to that which is auspicious. One can make his home perfectly auspicious when he engages in devotional service to Lord Vishnu. When one is engaged in activities other than Vishnu Bhakti, or in other words, when one is engaged in material activities, he's always filled with anxieties. A sane man should consult his mind, its thinking, feeling, and willing processes, and decide how these processes should be utilized. Not just say, well, what do you feel like doing today, mind? But rather, take the lead with the intelligence or the spiritual impetus directing the intelligence. One should decide how to utilize the thinking, feeling, and willing. If one always thinks of Krishna, feels how to serve him, so that's the proper use of the thinking and feeling, and wills to execute the order of Krishna, it should be known that he has taken good instruction from his intelligence, which is called the mother. Although the king was refreshed, he nonetheless inquired about his wife. Thus he was consulting, thinking and willing, how could he return to his steady good consciousness, because he had acted improperly. And Prabhupada explains, one can really be fixed in Krishna consciousness. How? Only if one has experienced very strong tastes. Param dvistvana vartate vishyavani vartante nirarasya deinara sobra jamma sopyasya param dvistvana vartate. Even if one's mind will flicker here and there and other desires come, they will go quickly if one is fixed in a higher taste. And that means keeping always in Krishna, in touch with Krishna and Krishna's energy, Krishna consciousness. So King Parajana said, I do not understand why my household paraphernalia does not attract me as before. I think if there is neither a mother nor devoted wife at home, the home is like a chariot without wheels. Where is the fool who will sit down on such an unworkable chariot? So his wife isn't there to greet him. She's actually quite angry at him because he's done the wrong thing. He's acted improperly, irreligiously. The intelligence is angry. And therefore, when the intelligence leaves us in that way, then what we have doesn't bring us pleasure anymore. So he found no pleasure in his previously enjoyed activities. It's like, you ever go to a place where you had many fond memories and shared with so many people memories, and then if those people are no longer there, you visit the place and there's nothing to do there anymore. That same place is there, but the circumstances don't allow the happiness that they previously afforded. 16. So he spoke to the ladies of the palace, because he wanted to know where his wife was. Kindly let me know the whereabouts of that beautiful woman who always saves me when I am drowning in the ocean of danger. By giving me good intelligence at every step, she always saves me. Prabhupada's purport. There is no... Saktrini, listen to this one. There is no difference between a good wife and good intelligence. One who possesses good intelligence can deliberate properly and save himself from many dangerous conditions. In material existence, there is danger at every step. In Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said, Padam Padam Yad Vibhadam Natesham. This material world is not actually a place of residence for an intelligent person or a devotee, because there's danger at every step. Vaikuntha is the real home for the devotee, for there is no anxiety. That's what Vaikuntha literally means, no anxiety, and no danger. Good intelligence means becoming Krishna conscious. And Chaitanya Charitamrita said, Krishna ye bhaje sabara chatur. Unless one is Krishna conscious, he cannot be called an intelligent person. 17. So all the women of the palace, he was looking for his wife, addressed the king, and the women addressed the king. O master of the citizens, we do not know why your dear wife has taken on this sort of existence. O killer of enemies, kindly look. She is lying on the ground without bedding. We cannot understand why she is acting in this way. The great sage Narada continued to narrate the story to Prachinibharishad. My dear King Prachinibharhi, as soon as King Puranjana saw his queen lying on the ground, appearing like a mendicant, renounced, not paying him any attention, he became bewildered, immediately became bewildered. Prabhupada's purport. In this verse, the word avadutam is especially significant, for it refers to a mendicant who does not take care of his body. Since the queen was lying on the ground without bedding and proper dress, King Puranjana became very much aggrieved. In other words, he repented that he had neglected his intelligence and engaged himself in the forest in killing animals. In other words, when one's good intelligence is separated or neglected, he fully engages in sinful activities. Due to neglecting one's good intelligence or Krishna consciousness, one becomes bewildered and engages in sinful activities. Upon realizing this, a man becomes repentant. This is quite important points coming up. So realizing, so Maharaj Puranjana realized he had done something wrong when he saw his intelligence or his wife there was rejecting and was in an upset condition. So upon realizing this, that he had done something improper, a man becomes repentant. Such repentance is described by Narottama Das Thakur, Hari Hari Bipale Janama Gonaino Manusha Janamapaya Radha Krishna Navajiya Janiya Shuniya Vishakaino. Narottama Das Thakur herein says that he repents for having spoiled his human life and knowingly drunk poison. What is the poison? Materialistic activities. Knowingly, knowing that we shouldn't do this. Janiya, shunya means after having heard that we shouldn't do this, that he shouldn't do this, and after knowing it, still drank poison. And what happens when you drink poison?
You
die. You don't become Lord Shiva. By not being Krishna conscious, one willingly drinks the poison of material life. The purport is that one certainly becomes addicted to sinful activities when he becomes devoid of his good chaste wife, or when he has lost his good sense and does not take to Krishna consciousness. Text 19. The king, with a grieved mind, began to speak to his wife with very pleasing words. Although he was filled with regret and tried to pacify her, he could not see any symptom of anger caused by love within the heart of his beloved wife. Purport. The king very much regretted having left his queen and having gone to the forest to execute sinful activities. When a person regrets his sinful activities, the abandoning of Krishna consciousness and good intelligence, his path of deliverance from the path of material clutches is opened. When he regrets his sinful activities, the abandoning of Krishna consciousness and good intelligence, his path of deliverance from the path of material clutches is opened. Regret, lamentation. As stated in the Bhagavatam, Prabhavas tavad abhojato yavanna gigyasata atmatatvam. When a person loses his Krishna consciousness and loses interest in self-realization, he must engage in sinful activities. All one's activities in a life devoid of Krishna consciousness simply lead to defeat and misuse of one's life. Naturally, one who comes to Krishna consciousness regrets his previous sinful activities in the human form. Only by this process can one be delivered from the clutches of nescience or ignorance in materialistic life. So what's the process that he's saying? What process is he saying is required?
Repentance,
lamenting one's previous un-Krishna conscious, inappropriate, improper, sinful activities. Text 20. Because the king was very expert in flattery, he began to pacify his queen very slowly. First he touched her 2 feet, then embraced her nicely, seating her on his lap, and he began to speak as follows. Purport. One has to awaken his Krishna consciousness by first regretting his past deeds. Just as King Paranjana began to flatter his queen, one should, by deliberate consideration, raise himself to the platform of Krishna consciousness. To attain such an end, one must touch the lotus feet of the spiritual master. Krishna consciousness cannot be achieved by self-endeavor. One must therefore approach a self-realized Krishna-conscious person and touch his lotus feet. Prahlad Maharaj therefore said, Naishamati stavararukramangrim sprisha dinata pagamo yarata Mahiyasham padarajo vishekam niskin sananam navarnit.
One cannot come to the precincts of Krishna consciousness unless he touches the dust of the lotus feet of a person who has become a mahatma, a great devotee. This is the beginning of the surrendering process. Lord Krishna wants everyone to surrender unto him, and this surrendering process begins when one touches the lotus feet of a bona fide spiritual master. By sincerely rendering service to a bona fide spiritual master, one begins his spiritual life in Krishna consciousness. Touching the lotus feet of a spiritual master means giving up one's false prestige and unnecessarily puffed up position in the material world. Those who remain in the darkness of material existence due to their false prestigious position, so-called scientists and philosophers, are actually atheists. They do not know the ultimate cause of everything. Although bewildered, they are not ready to surrender themselves to the lotus feet of a person who knows things in their proper perspective. In other words, one cannot arouse Krishna consciousness simply by his own material mental speculation. One must surrender to a bona fide spiritual master. Only this process will help one. So King Paranjana said to his wife, "My dear beautiful wife, when a master accepts a servant as his own man but does not punish him for his offenses, the servant must be considered unfortunate. My dear slender maiden," we'll read that purport after. 22. When a master chastises his servant, the servant should accept this as great mercy. One who becomes angry must be very foolish not to know that such is the duty of a friend. My dear wife, your teeth are very beautifully set, and your attractive features make you appear very thoughtful. Kindly give up your anger, be merciful upon me, and please smile upon me with loving attachment. When I see a smile on your beautiful face, and when I see your hair, which is as beautiful as the color blue, and I see your raised nose and hear your sweet talk, you will become more beautiful to me and thus attract me and oblige me. You are my most respected mistress. So on one level,
He's approaching his intelligence and approaching his Krishna consciousness, and it's glorious on one level of the story, and on the other level of the story he appears quite foolish, captivated by illusion in this way. But on the allegory level, the last part of the purport, King Paranjana begged his queen to return to her original beauty. He tried to revive her, just as a living entity tries to revive his original consciousness, Krishna consciousness, which is very beautiful. All the beautiful features of the queen could be compared to the beautiful features of Krishna consciousness. When one returns to his original Krishna consciousness, he actually becomes steady and his life becomes successful. O hero's wife. That's funny, isn't it? Why is that funny?
Because he's the hero.
He's the glorifying your wife by saying, you are married to the most wonderful person. Oh, wife of the most wonderful person. Oh, hero's wife. Kindly tell me if someone has offended you. I am prepared to give such a person punishment as long as he does not belong to the Brahmana caste. But for the servant of Murari Ripu, Krishna, means the enemy or the enemy of Murari. I excuse no one within or beyond these three worlds. No one can freely move after offending you, for I am prepared to punish him. So he's very intelligent. He knows he's the one. But he's saying, if anyone has done anything to you, I off with his head, I will immediately chastise him. You're the wife of a great hero. Me. I'll read some of that purport as well. My dear wife, until this day, I have never seen your face without tilak decorations, nor have I ever seen you so morose and without luster or affection, nor have I seen your two nice breasts wet with tears from your eyes, nor have I ever before seen your lips, which are ordinarily as red as the bimba fruit, without their reddish hue. My dear queen, due to my sinful desires, I went to the forest to hunt without asking you. Therefore, I must admit that I have offended you. Nonetheless, thinking of me as your most intimate subordinate, you should still be very much pleased with me. Factually, I am very much bereaved. But being pierced by the arrow of Cupid, I am feeling lusty. But where is the beautiful woman who would give up her lusty husband and refuse to unite with him? Prabhupada explains in his purport. Both man and woman desire one another. That is the basic principle of material existence. Women in general always keep themselves beautiful so that they can be attractive to their lusty husbands. When a lusty husband comes before his wife, the wife takes advantage of his aggressive activities and enjoys life. Generally, when a woman is attacked by a man, whether a husband or some other man, she enjoys the attack. Here, Prabhupada is making those kind of statements again. When a woman is attacked by a man, whether he's a husband or other some man, she enjoys the attack. Prabhupada does not mean that when a man comes after a woman with a baseball bat, even if he's, whether a husband or not a husband, or a cricket bat, she enjoys the attack. He doesn't mean that at all. He means that the type of attention given by a lusty person to a woman, the attraction and the aggressiveness, the seductive aggressiveness, the woman tends to enjoy because it gives them power. In other words, when one's intelligence is properly utilized, both the intellect and the intelligent person enjoy one another with great satisfaction. So let's just read those other two other purports. So the king has made up with his wife, or he's gone back to his proper intelligence. Now let's read some of that purport from 21. King Puranjana said, "My dear beautiful wife, when a master accepts a servant as his own man but does not punish him for his offenses, the servant must be considered unfortunate. According to Vedic civilization, domestic animals and servants are treated exactly like one's children, one's own children. Animals and children are sometimes punished not out of vengeance but out of love. Similarly, a master sometimes punishes his servant not out of vengeance but out of love, to correct him and bring him to the right point. Thus King Paranjana took his punishment dealt by his wife, the queen, as mercy upon him. He considered himself the most obedient servant of the queen. She was angry at him for his sinful activities, namely hunting in the forest and leaving her at home. King Paranjana accepted the punishment as actual love and affection from his wife. In the same way, when a person is punished by the laws of nature, by the will of God, he should not be disturbed. A real devotee thinks in this way. When a devotee is put into an awkward position, he takes it as the mercy of the Supreme Lord. Tate anukampam susamikshamano bhunjane vatma kritam vapakam vidvad vapurbi vidatan namaste jivatayo muktipade sadayavak. This verse states that the devotee accepts a reversal of his position in life as a benediction by the Lord and consequently offers the Lord more obeisances in prayer, thinking that the punishment is due to his past misdeeds and that the Lord is punishing him very mildly. The punishment awarded by the state or by God for one's own faults is actually for one's benefit. In the Manusmriti, it is said that the king should be considered merciful when he condemns a murderer to death, because a murderer punished in this life becomes freed from his sinful activities and in the next life takes birth cleared of all sins. If one accepts punishment as a reward dealt by the master, he becomes intelligent enough not to commit the same mistake again. And then in 24, so he's talking about punishing another who has offended her. So in the second paragraph of the purport, Prabhupada says, "One's pure intelligence or pure Krishna consciousness becomes polluted by material activities. Pure consciousness can be revived by the process of sacrifice, charity, pious activities, etc. But when one pollutes his Krishna consciousness by offending a Brahmin or a Vaishnava, it is very difficult to revive." Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has described the Vaishnava Bharat, or offense to a Vaishnava, is the mad elephant offense. One should be very careful not to offend a Vaishnava or a Brahmana. Even the great yogi, Devasa, was harassed by the Sudarshan Chakra when he offended the Vaishnava Maharaj Ambarish, who was neither a Brahmana nor a sannyasi, but an ordinary householder. Maharaj Ambarish was a Vaishnava, and consequently Devasa Muni was chastised. The conclusion is that if Krishna consciousness is covered by material sins, one can eliminate the sins simply by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. But if one pollutes his Krishna consciousness by offending a Brahmin or a Vaishnava, one cannot revive it until one properly atones for the sin by pleasing the offended Vaishnava or Brahmana. This was the course that Devasa Muni had to follow, for he surrendered unto Maharaj Ambarish. A Vaishnava aparad cannot be atoned for by any means other than begging the pardon of the offended Vaishnava. Okay, so now Paranjana, he's married, he's gone and enjoyed himself, neglected his queen, and now he's going to be attacked. His life goes on, and Tandavega will attack the city of Paranjana and Kalakanya. It's
The times are going to just get worse now for poor King Paranjana. So we'll, next week, if Krishna allows, we'll move on. Any questions or comments? Thank you. You can explain that. Like Janie, why the wife is intelligence. This is what it is in the story. But you see it clearly.
What you mean, why in the story the wife is intelligent, or why is the wife a good wife compared to good intelligence?
Which do you mean? In the story, is why is the wife considered intelligence?
Mm-hmm. Anyhow, for intelligence means generally acquiring about it, knowing about the reality of life, real stuff. Material or spiritual, even material intelligence means to lead you to spiritual intelligence. Slow, very slowly, but it's meant to do that. Intelligence means intelligence, which leads to good. But whereas a woman as a wife which gives you any material.
So this was explained a little earlier. Specifically, it shifts later on in the purports, but in the beginning, when she's designated or defined as material intelligence, she's pravritti marg intelligence. And the example is that if you want to enjoy this world, there's two ways to enjoy it. There's a whimsical, irreligious way that will take the desires to enjoy and degrade them to ignorance and entangle one deeper in the material world. And then an intelligent person will enjoy his life in a religious way, using the restrictions that the religious, that the shastras offer, and enjoy. So in other words, so that will gradually purify one, just as you said. So in other words, what Paranjana did that was really improper, when he went to the forest, he neglected his one wife, which meant enjoying in a religious way or an intelligent way where the future will bring you spiritual advancement gradually, eventually. And he neglected that good intelligence, that good wife, and he went to the forest letting his mind go wild, acting whimsically, following his senses, doing everything, anything, at any time he felt like. So that's the meaning of the neglecting the wife and going into the forest of sense objects. This is what was described yesterday. So the wife represents the pious way to enjoy life. In that sense, material intelligence.
So material intelligence in relationship to religion.
Material religious intelligence, the pravritti marg, as opposed to the
not just material
Hay Street marg,
like
or something.
Buildings and how to
bring a computer. It's pravritti marg intelligence, and we see gradually she's in the purport. The analogy shifts from that into her being Krishna conscious. Intelligence, which he neglected. Is that all right?
I haven't
That the wife represents the pious way to enjoy.
That's Narada Muni has chosen to set the story up like that.
Yeah. That represents in this particular story.
So that's very, so in that sense, it's the intelligence, how to enjoy in a way that you can still have your desires fulfilled, but you don't ruin yourself for future, in the future. So that is quite parallel to someone who has material desires getting married and staying with his one wife, as opposed to leaving that one wife, leaving his intelligence and just going here and there, enjoying, led by his mind. So within that frame of reference, it should be understood.
And in that, and then we described how the good wife was equal to the good intelligence, because the good wife, in that analogy, gives you all the things you want, and your good intelligence gives you all the things that you
in
want.
Such a way that you're purified and don't act irreligiously in a safe way. The same, a similar point is going to be described in the beginning of the fifth canto with Priyavrata. So sometimes the household of life and things like that are glorified for some people, and from some point of view it's required. But from the point of view of Paramhamsa life and Shuddha Bhakti, pure devotional service, it won't be glorified in the same way. What will be glorified is simply pure devotion. In the pastime of Priyavrata, in the same way, religious marriage will be, a wife marriage will be like a fort to protect one compared to that.
So he left the Prabhupati Marg to go to unrestricted
sense enjoyment instead of to renunciation.
So therefore his intelligence was angry with him.
Okay. He offended his the good advice of the intelligence, the facility that was given to him by his good intelligence.
When the king goes to the forest to hunt, what kind of a herd that he takes his wife?
But usually he takes his intelligence. So in the analogy, that's what he left behind.
He didn't ask her permission to go.
He wasn't necessarily
going to go, but he went. He disregarded her entirely. It describes he completely forgot about it, and he went.
That's why the example of going to the forest to hunt is appropriate in the analogy, because that's when he doesn't take his wife. That's the thing that somebody does without their intelligence, so to speak.
He actually went to perform sinful activities, and because when you're going to perform sinful activities, and Prabhupada called it, he said it's actually woman hunting that he was doing. So naturally, who is the last person you want to take with you if you want to go woman hunting? It's your wife. So the analogy is a little, you have to be very creative in your thinking about it. He went to really try to enjoy his senses in it. That's the pancha prashtan. He went to the place of the five sense objects. So he went to enjoy, actually. There's only one person who took his wife to the forest. Ram.
Pandu.
And Pandu. So many kings who go with their wives. Yes? Even Prithu Maharaj went with his wife at the end too. Anyway, this is the analogy. You don't approve. Don't worry. And the Sahastra Samhita will all be cleared up. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jaya. Narada Muni ki jaya. Shri Prabhupada.